This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are now more ways to stay in touch with your union. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you have any comments about the show or would like us to promote a community event or have any issue involving District Council 37, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We are continuing this week a conversation we began last week with the former president of, with the retired president of Local 1320, New York City Sewage Treatment and Sewage, Senior Sewage Treatment Workers. That's a long title. The president was Jim Tuccarelli. Thank you very much for staying to continue the conversation. Where we left off last week was we were talking about the administratorship and the changes that took place within District Council 37 20 years ago. And part of what we were doing then, as I recall, was we were getting very much involved in the political scene that was taking place at the time, both in terms of both nationally and locally. And I think the administrator who came in from Washington, Lee Saunders, who is now the president of AFSCME, felt it was very important for us to be very visible in terms of politics. You have seen a lot of the political winds changing. You are a blue-collar guy in a city that produced Donald Trump, the current president of the United States of America. And I'm wondering how you feel about that. And you can go anywhere you want with that question, because I really think it's because Trump's bread and butter in terms of the voters, according to the media, is the blue collar worker and the promises that he made to work, quote unquote, working America. What do you think about those promises and how do you think he's delivered on those promises?
Well, first, I don't think he's a product of New York City. We're better than that. Well, unfortunately, his mother and father had decided to have him, and we're stuck
in New York City.
Now,
right.
You know, it's tough for me. It really is. I'm a native Staten Islander. Originally, I was a registered Republican before I got involved with the union movement, and then found out the importance and where the Democratic Party was going, what they were doing for working men and women like myself. As I said last week, I came from nothing. I was on unemployment, and if it wasn't for the union pushing and getting the civil service exam, what would I have? So my loyalty became with the Democratic Party that was doing the right thing for us. As far as the Trump movement, I am really, really, really hoping that a lot of folks' eyes, especially the blue-collar people, see through a lot of the nonsense that this president is putting out. And truly, where our American values are going, blue-collar. Blue-collar rolls up their sleeve
right
when a job or something happens. 9/11. You roll up your sleeves. You don't worry about anything. You just jump in there and do what you have to do and deal with the consequences later on. I'm hoping that they see that all the promises that were made, especially, look what's going on with the coal miners. What did he do for those blue-collar workers there? He promised them the elevator and gave them the shaft. As it stands with a lot of the other groups. The auto workers, we're not shutting down plants. We're going to build them here. We're not taking it to Mexico. Well, guess what, folks? Look what's happening. Realize, open your eyes, see what's happening. Try to put aside all of the rah-rah, make America great again. America has always been great because we are Americans and we are what makes America great. Not someone saying, make America great again.
You mentioned 9/11, and I cannot allow this conversation to end without talking about 9/11, because 9/11 hit. DC-37 headquarters is around the corner from Ground Zero. The building was being used in the aftermath of 9/11 as a command center. I saw you the day after 9/11, and then I saw you never stop. You were very much involved in working the cleanup and doing whatever you could to help at that incredibly troubled time in the city's history. What was 9/11 about for you in the days and months after?
Again, we were under the administratorship at the time. Once that happened, we were wiped out. My whole life, again, was like, what the hell are we going to do? How do I provide benefits for the members? It's not only the members, it's the members' families. We had none of our computers up and running. There was no power in the building. And it wasn't only myself. It was Jose Sierra. It was David Catala. It was Bill Fenty. A lot of the blue-collar guys went down there into the building with Al Lacasio, who was the building manager. He gave us the keys, and we would go up and down the stairs to get out all of the files, the hard drives, anything that we needed to get them over to Lee Saunders, who would then set up remote service areas where we could get health and security up again so our members could get benefits, so that we could service the members as far as any files for grievance hearings or any arbitrations that were going on. We needed to provide the members with the general services that were there. Also, you mentioned that we were able to get back into our building again. It was the headquarters. Yeah, Lee cut that deal. PD and everybody was using the
police department.
The police department was using, and the FBI was using the high school up the street, Peter Stuyvesant, but it wasn't big enough to handle them. Went and cut a deal with Dennis Sullivan. Listen, you could use our ground floor, but the conditions are you could have it for as long as you want it, which was one block away from the hole, okay, the dig. You could have that as your headquarters, but you got to bring the power back in, all of the utilities back in, and you got to allow us to start cleaning from the second floor up so that we could get back into our building. It was a brilliant move. We were back in service in our own home in half the time that anybody else was there. Plus, we were doing the service. So, yeah, it was down there a lot. Suffered the consequences, but so did everybody else, you know, that was down there.
The how do you feel about the victim? We're fighting for the victims' compensation fund still. John Stewart is still going down to Washington and, you know, berating the officials for, why are we here again? Why isn't this just done? What do you think about the response to folks like yourself who put, I mean, I saw the proclamation that AFSCME gave you at your farewell the other evening, you know, acknowledging the great work that you did. Lee said he couldn't do it without you, what getting the union back together. What do you think about the way the response has been to 9/11 in terms of working with victims and their families?
First of all, I don't think it was right how we were treated from the beginning. Christy Whitman came in and said, the air is fine. EPA said, everything's wonderful. You can go in there. It's safe to work. We believed her. We went in there. We did what we had to do, what we were asked to do. Nobody asked any questions. Right. Again, the blue-collar mentality. When the bell rings, you get in the ring and do what you have to do. And that's what we did. Okay? Now, when all of us, many years later, that was exposed to that stuff, start coming down with these horrific diseases that not only are killing a lot of us, but are rendering a good portion of us with cancer later on that's very expensive. And then all of a sudden, they turn around and say, well, you know what? Yes, you are a victim. We paid somebody else under the Victim Compensation Fund X amount of dollars, but since we're running out of money, you get zero or you get 70%, or you get 50%. How do they justify that? And it's not right. all about the money, because whatever we get eventually is going to kill all of us. It's about giving it to the grandkids or whatever and saying, this is just something to acknowledge the fact that he was there and, you know, will, you know, carry on. How do you cover a drug that's $10,685 a month to that keeps you alive, and now they say there's no funding for it? I can't take that out of my pocket. And going on Medicare, they're not going to cover it. I'm going to be in donut hole. So how do I get around all of this? So please, I mean, you know, common sense. Take care of us.
Jim Tucciarelli is a longtime local president at District Council 37. He has served on the District Council 37 Executive Board. He has been a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Judicial Panel, which helps resolve disputes across the country. I know, and I was very moved by the genuine outpouring of affection for you in all the time, because you're not an easy person to deal with. No. But there is truly a great deal of love. I thought Lee was very moved, and it has been a pleasure. It has been a pleasure knowing that you were there the whole time, that for so many folks who really talked about Henry Garrido, the executive director, talked about how he's come to depend on you and to rely on you. And Lee talked about the work that you did. So I just wanted to pay homage to that, and I wanted to get on the record the thoughts and the wisdom of Jim Tucciarelli, and I really wanted to thank you for spending the time with us.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for what you just said, Chris. I appreciate that.
We will be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. Our next guest is the Executive Director of District Council 37, Mr. Henry Garrido. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a busy summer for District Council 37, and I wanted to hope that you could catch us up on a number of things. Perhaps the first thing that we should talk about and reflect on is that yesterday, Wednesday, was a day of reflection and sadness, remembering our brother Hector Figueroa of 32BJ. He was a friend and a colleague and a brother to you.
He was indeed. I mean, there's no doubt the labor movement has lost a true giant. A gentle giant who did so much for the workers and fought for the dignity of so many people. And his untimely past has left us all with a tremendous void. Personally, Hector was a brother to me. He was a friend. He was somebody that I trusted and I spoke often and collaborated often with. And his loss has left us all, you know, really shaken up. But I think that knowing Hector, knowing what his life was all about, knowing what his dedication was, we owe it to him. We owe it to his memory. We owe it to his family to keep the fight going, because that's who he was. That's who he was all about, constantly and never ending until the end of his days, fighting for what was righteous and in the society. And, you know, we're terribly saddened. We are praying for his family, for Deidre, for his children, who were the life of, you know, his life. But again, I think he would want us to continue to go fighting for what is righteous and, you know, what's right for workers. You know, we mourn him, but we fight on his memory.
Well, one of the fights that DC-37 collaborated with our sister union, DC-1707, and we'll talk some more about the relationship between the two unions. One of the issues that we were working on was the issue of pay parity. And I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about what the issue was and what we accomplished for 1707.
Well, I think, first of all, we need to preface this by saying that the 1707 Council of ASME, representing nonprofit child care, locals, home care, has officially become part of District Council 37 as one union. So that means District Council 37 now represents all the six locals that are in the 1707, you know, across the board. That's about 22,000 new members who are part of District Council 37, which brings us, with that increase, to a total of 150,000 members strong.
It also puts us in the private sector, as you say.
Yes, and about 100, I don't want to forget, 100,000 retirees, too, which are very critical between the two. So that's 250,000 strong that we put, plus their families, both now public and private sector. And I think it was a lot of work. It was a lot of thinking. I want to thank our national union president, Lee Saunders, for having the courage to do that. This is what's happening across the country, what we're doing in response to Janus and in response to the challenges that we're facing right now. And I think this unification made a lot of sense. And as a prime example of that, we started with joining hands in fighting for something that was, an incredible inequity taking place between educators. Our early childhood education, where the mayor has made his main topic of his administration, getting paid substantially less than the counterparts of represented people at, you know, the United Federations of Teachers. And we together jointly embarked on a campaign and subsequent negotiations to make sure that those teachers and educators and support staff, that they receive the righteous pay and due. And we have successfully done that. And it's an example that when the unions get together, when we both use all that political leverage, when we put our smarts together in terms of negotiating and navigating complicated negotiations, that we succeed. And we have done so by getting a first and unique parity agreement that gives a substantial raise to teachers with master's degree to the tune of $21,000+, and those with a BA to about $18,000. I mean, that's pretty unique, since that local has been trying to do this for 25 years. District Council 37's unification with 1707 in a matter of 2 months have already delivered that.
Wow.
In addition to that, we did take care of giving the support staff also a bump, an increase above anything that was projected. So we're feeling pretty good about that.
And this takes place, and someone mentioned that this is a marvelous opportunity for organizing and bringing more people into the union. What do you feel about
that? Yeah, I mean, I think this is an example of what the power of the union could be. Here's an industry that is about one-third of the workers are in the union, and two-thirds are not. And we believe part of the reason why the inequity took place for so many years is because the vast majority of the people didn't have a union to advocate on their behalf, but politically, and to push to make sure that they got the collective bargaining agreement increases that they deserved, that they were on par for their other union counterparts or their brethren from the UFT. And so now we're looking to do both. We're looking to not only pay parity for all of the teachers that are in the union, covered by Local 205 and Local 95, and ultimately by Local 215 as well. But we are also looking for an opportunity to organize the other two-thirds, or the majority of the two-thirds, by saying, you know, please join the union, because this is not just about salaries. This salary inequities was a very, very big piece of this, but it wasn't the only piece. Because what we have found is that the entire sector has been defunded. What we have found is that in addition to everything that we have talked about, that there are major issues with the pension, which is covered by CIRS, which DC 37 members are part of. They have substantial more increases in premiums for health insurance, and where the non-union workers don't have health insurance, and the union workers too. So we are fighting not just for fair wages and salaries and parity, which is huge, but also we're fighting for those individuals to have health insurance and to have a pension. And part of what we're fighting for right now is that if they join the union, they have an opportunity to get all three, both parity, immediately. And so this is a very big deal and a prime example how a union can lead to improvements immediately in the lives of the individuals. And that's what we're doing here.
It is certainly better to have a union on your side than to not be part of one, is what your basic message here is, I think.
Right, especially in this sector, right? The nonprofit sector is always being attacked by not having the money for infrastructure and for rent and for wages and for benefits, since they're more about a human service than they are about, you know, selling a product.
Right.
And that they're about this. So that's always a challenge. So having an institution that's going to fight politically for the funding, for the industry, for making sure that the proper preservation of benefit and that changes are not affecting the people that are, you know, servicing the population, it's critical. And we think that one of those areas that is mostly needed in it's having a union. So we are we're happy to be that union,
right?
And I'm here to make that case for them to join voluntarily. So we're encouraging card check neutrality and encouraging all of us to just join DC 37 at this point.
Well, it was clear from the press conference when the announcement was made that as far as the advocates and the nonprofit organizations were concerned, this was a huge breakthrough. As you say, this was a fight that had been waged for decades, and the combined power and strength of 1707 and DC 37 and the strategic thinking about this clearly pushed this over the top.
Yeah, I mean, from the times of Brother Raglan George marching around City Hall and, Dickie Mitchell doing some work, and then Kim Medina, of course, being a champion of this lately, and now us joining him, this is a hell of a big deal for us to get this done and to get the administration. So I want to thank the mayor and the speaker who, you know, took up the mantle, say this is going to be a progressive city that's going to look at, the whole aspect of this. Then it should, at a productive city, be in a position to not be treating individuals like second-class citizens. So They were great about it. They were very helpful. We still had to do a complicated deal that was pattern conforming, so we didn't disenfranchise the other folks that have a collective bargaining agreement. And so we're very happy about exactly how we were able to achieve that. But we need the folks to join a union, the ones who are not, because it makes us stronger and it allows us to advocate for them as well.
We've got about 3 minutes left. Let's talk about the move that DC 37 is making to both from 125 Barclay Street and what's happening with that building and where we will be moving forward for the next few years.
Right, absolutely. When I was elected executive director, I pledged then that I would work everything to preserve the great things of, you know, the past, which are being challenged all around from the Supreme Court to the local area. But at the same time, I understood that in order for us to accommodate the growth that I mentioned before, and to be in the cutting edge and deliver the best services for our members, that we needed to modernize, we needed to improve. And that a big part of that starts with our facility here, 125 Barclay Street, which has been great, but it was in need of many repairs and modernization. And so where we embarked has been a tremendous restructuring of the union that starts not only with this building, but also reconstructing the Barclay Street Dental Center and continuing to redo all these pieces. So we are going to be moving out of 125 Barclay Street to 55 Water Street. The move is already underway. We expect that to be done completely by the end of this month. And then over the next 3 years, we're going to be in the process of reconstructing this building and the Chamber Street operation and the Brooklyn Street operation. And we're going to go from there. I still encourage the members to come to 125 Barclay Street, as we will keep the ground floor open, right, for intake. You know, it's a lot more accessible than that of 55 Water Street. I mean, they can still go there, but it's a little more difficult to get in there.
We're setting up services desks on the first floor of 125 Barclay. That's correct?
Yeah, that's already been done.
Right.
So we're waiting for it. So service desks have already been done. It's working very smoothly, very successfully so far, where people walk in and they can get immediate services without having to navigate through all the difficulties. So, you know, I think we're setting up a path for building our future here. And I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the challenge. I think our members are excited. I have a much modern, much service-oriented union directed in.
We're going to have to.
It's going to be a challenge, but, you know.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Henry Garrido is the executive director of District Council 37, talking about moving the union forward. I want to thank our listeners. I also want to thank our producer, Rudy Orozco, our engineer, Andrea Minocchio. If you have something to say, State of the Union at DC37.net. Till next time, ciao.